Grave Tone.
Welcome to Grave Tone Podcast, where horror comes to life in every form it takes. I'm Megan.
And I'm Arthur.
And we have another childhood trauma episode for people, but not a regular one, because it's not just us riffing on these movies that we should not be have been afraid of when we were kids. We are joined this week by our friend Elazar over at Nightmare Echoes Podcast. Yay!
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for hopping on with us. This is fun. I think we've come to a place now where we've definitely examined some of our childhood trauma films, and we're getting to a point now where we need to start examining other people.
Sure,
we've done this once before with our friends at Horror Roulette Podcast, and so now I think it's going to be really fun for us to branch out a little bit and start kind of, you know, examining other people's childhood trauma.
Plus this one is a really fun one, so
it's true, actually. So this is gonna be a great one for us to do. We don't really get that much of an opportunity to do like older films that frequently, so it's kind of nice to be able to have these excuses on hand.
100%.
Yeah.
So please tell us about your podcast, because you also have a horror podcast, which is awesome.
Sure. We're Nightmare Echoes. We don't always do the newest things, but we do like to explore other older films. Like for this series, we've done every film in the series, I guess, unless you count Lee Cronin's The Mummy, because we haven't done that yet, because it's still pretty darn new. I think we've had somewhere around 120-ish episodes, and I have several different hosts that all have different interests in horror, which I think is fun, because I can get one person to really deep dive into religious horror, and his background in like learning Latin has really helped with that.
Nice.
And then I have someone that's more of the comedy or teen slasher kind of person, and then you know, each person is different. So it's a lot of fun.
That is fun. It gives like a lot of different flavor to the podcast, because all of your different co-hosts are, you know, that's that they have different interests. They have different voices. They have different feelings about things.
Yes.
So it's kind of fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We were fortunate enough to hop on with you guys and record an episode that I want to say came out at the end of April, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
About The Substance. So we were able to chat with you and with your co-host, Margot, who's a hoot, by the way, if you guys go back and listen to that episode. It's very funny.
She's pretty funny.
So today, as the title of the episode that I'm sure you've read already suggests, we are talking about Elazar's childhood trauma film, and we are talking about Evil Dead. Obviously, I think most people are probably aware of the Evil Dead franchise as a whole and kind of how everything sort of came together for these films to be made. But the first film, technically, this entire series is based on a short film that Sam Raimi managed to pull together with like Bruce Campbell and Robert Tappert, if I'm not mistaken, back in, I want to say 1979, they were able to get funding for a short, which wound up being, I think it's a half hour long short. What's it called? It's called Within the Woods. And through that short, they were able to push for additional funding to actually make a full length feature, which became the original Evil Dead film, which came out in 1981. And following that film, 6 years later, basically, they were able to follow it up with a sequel, requel, reboot thing before that became a thing that people were doing on a regular basis. They were the first, I feel.
No, it's interesting. It just popped in my head that things really haven't changed that much. We just changed platforms. Curry Barker literally did the same thing with YouTube.
Yeah, true.
Put out a short, which is more of like a full movie.
Yeah.
And then, bam.
And then got money
and then
to make a
look
feature.
Look at this guy.
It's true. Correct.
Damn.
What's interesting is that Bruce Campbell says that if you just take around like the first 8 to 12 minutes of Evil Dead 2 out, and where he's getting hit by the force that's sending him backwards, you really can just continue the film as if it's one long film.
Yes.
You definitely can, because that's it. So my understanding from everything that we've
So what was
into,
that you're saying about the whole rights thing? Why they had to redo
so there
that?
Were issues because of multiple studios having the rights to the first film. So when it came to making a sequel, they could not get the rights to the footage from the original film, which is Cuckoo Nuts Bananas to think of. But that's just something, unfortunately, that happens, I think, less frequently now, but like would happen a lot in the film industry, especially back in the day. And so the team, instead of remaking the film completely, decided, okay, we kind of want to do something else with this anyway, so we're just going to condense it. So they basically condense roughly the events of the first film into like the first 10, 15 minutes, whatever it is,
even less
of the second one. Yeah. And they change the story slightly. They, you know, eliminate certain characters. So it's not a group of friends. It's just Ash Williams and his girlfriend, Linda, who are going to the cabin for like a weekend or whatever it is. Although they seem to be weirdly not supposed to be there in this one, which I was like, okay, guys, why are you breaking into someone's cabin? That's weird. Which is where that, strange. Well, it's where that, like, I think that is part of the reason that you have that weird fan theory that people have, right? Where they're like, oh no, it's because there was like the presence and like the demonic sort of deadite presence was calling him back to the cabin years later.
Yeah, because he remembers like nothing.
No. And he's still with Linda, quote yes. unquote. It's like, is it the same Linda? She's played by a different actress.
What was your take on it, Eleazar, when you first saw the first or the second one?
So, okay. It's interesting because as a kid, right? I was, I guess, 12 when I saw Army of Darkness first.
Yes,
which is
me too.
The comedy
that one first. Yep.
And so, being the, I don't know, wanting to be cool to my friends when they're like, "Oh, well, you've seen the original too, right?" And I'm like, "Yeah, totally." Yeah. I'm like, and in my head there was like, "What did they mean?" Like, so I had to go back, and I would say that's, I mean, like we'll get into that later, but that's why those scared me a lot, but. It's interesting though with the I don't know, you can either take it as another reality or that they're just summarizing the events, but they simplified it down. But you're right, they did change the fact that they're not supposed to be there. They didn't rent the cabin this time. No. But then an interesting fact as well, Linda is played by a third actress in Army of Darkness.
Yes.
Because they could not get the rights to Evil Dead 2 when they made Army of Darkness.
Crazy. Come on.
Oh,
which, get that legal team working, man.
which continues on to the TV show Ash versus the Evil Dead. They couldn't get the rights to Army of Darkness, only part one and two, so they pretended like that storyline didn't exist.
Wow, and they make fun of it. I think like in Ash versus Evil Dead, there's a lot of like comedic sort of moments in canon where they're like, "Yes, all of this doesn't make any sense and doesn't fit together." Ha 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 ha! How silly! Ha ha.
Yeah, totally.
Great. I mean, obviously, this was also, you know, it's interesting to see, I guess, the progression of this series, right? How it started as more kind of straightforward horror in the sense that there's a slightly more serious tone to the original film.
Yeah.
And you can see in that little time frame in like that 5-6 years really between films, how it was like suddenly everyone collectively was like, we should be a little bit funnier about this. I think that will play better and we should do that. And I think it paid off because I feel like almost every person I've ever spoken to, seen comments from online, et cetera, has a tendency to prefer Evil Dead 2 over the original film, just from like an enjoyment perspective.
Right. I totally get that. Yeah. If I want to go into it getting scared, mm-hmm. I want to see the first one for me. And all like I've talked about this in my podcast a lot, but I have three kids and each of them have watched different franchises with me.
Yeah,
because I can't get them all to sit down and watch them together. But so Joshua watched these with me and I remember showing him for the first time and Cheryl's like, it's not going to let us go. It's not going to let us go, like throughout the movie.
Yeah.
And my kid wants to take a break to get snacks. I'm like, that's fine. So we are in a brand new house.
Yeah.
And we go to open the door and the doorknob comes off of the door.
Oh,
and
I'm like,
it's not going to let us leave either. Like it was the funniest, like I sort of funny, but sort of was I a little scared as an adult? Sure, because the movie was getting to me and it freaked me the heck out.
It persists.
You took a minute and you were like, oh no. Oh God. Oh, that's so good. That's great. What great timing, just from like a comedic perspective for you to tell that story later too.
It's good. Yeah. I was like, oh no.
Okay. Eleazar, can you kind of walk us through a little bit, because you kind of touched on it, walk us through a little bit, set the scene for us about the first time that you watched this movie and what kind of effect it had on you sort of due to circumstance.
Sure. So I had a friend down the street, his name was Edward, and his dad had this massive VHS collection, and anything this kid ever wanted, he got. He was just that kid that his dad gave him everything.
Cool
and
dad.
So he had this, he had this massive closet that was just VHS horror tapes.
Okay.
So he introduced me to everything. I watched all the Nightmare on Elm Streets at his house. Everything that I could, I watched with him. And so I, went to him like, hey, you have Evil Dead? And so we went to go watch it. And for me, I would say being at that young age, the very susceptible around 12, it's like you see this sexual assault scene with these trees.
Oh my God, the tree.
And which is, I guess, the brainchild of Robert Taffert really was like, no, you got to go further. You got to go further. And while Sam Raimi today says that he regrets going that far, when they did the remake, the director said that Robert Taffert pulled him aside and said, no, you need to put this tree scene in there. It's iconic. And it wasn't in the original script, even in the remake, the 2013 one.
Yeah.
And so the actress didn't know she was going to do it. Oh, and they were like, oh, we need to film this scene that's not in the script here. And so that was really disturbing to me. I guess the only thing at that age I could relate it to scene would be like anime that went that far. And I was like, I shouldn't be watching this either.
Right.
And so that's pretty, I don't know, like disturbing in my head to wrap around what I'm watching.
Yeah. Oh, I hate but that.
Uh-uh. Then also anything, it's always bothered me. I was raised really religious. So anytime you bring demons into the equation, I'm a little bit more scared. Like, I know a lot of people are like, oh, demons don't scare me. And I get it. But for me, they still do.
Yeah.
And so that there's in the first one, Linda's laugh, where she's just sitting there and laughing at your trauma and there's nothing you can do. You can't escape. You can't leave. And she's just like,
yeah.
That bothers me so much that I know if I want to have a night where I'm going to get scared, I just pop.
That's interesting. Oh, I just want to be scared tonight. Just put on that movie.
Well, you know, on occasion, you just have those times where you're like, yes, I genuinely would like to watch something that's going to freak me out.
I guess.
Yeah. I think so. I think it happens. I don't think we're thinking about it actively, but I think we do it.
Yeah, for sure. Also. I can imagine.
Yeah. All right, so you watched it at his house pretty much for the first time and just sat there and got really uncomfortable with
the it's really uncomfortable and, you know, it's really weird. Definitely at the age where, you know, just don't understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, like In Evil Dead 2, the comedy does help, but it's really graphic. It's really bloody. The, you know, using the chainsaw to chop things off his hand.
Yeah.
Is kind of terrifying. I can't imagine like losing an appendage and then it becoming my worst enemy.
Crazy. They did it before Idle Hands got to hop on that bandwagon a number of years later in the 90s.
And then there's a theory that hand went on to be the thing
from the
Addams Family. Yeah. I've seen this theory online. That's like so hilarious. Like, oh no.
A thing is way too nice to be the hand.
Yeah, I get it.
Movie, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think that would be canon. That doesn't make sense to me.
Oh, I know.
Even at in this time period, you didn't often have very handsome leading men who were like really silly,
right?
What they were doing. Like, he's very goofy. He's very like over the top. Everything's very exaggerated. Like if he's yelling, the facial expressions, like the physical acting that he does at different times throughout the course of the movie. And you're just, and it's interesting. And I feel like I'm surprised to an extent. It's cool that he kind of like stuck with the types of genres that he did, but it's interesting to think that you're like, wow, somebody like stayed in this sphere when they were doing so much like this. Like they could have, you know, potentially he could have gone into like maybe more like very, very well-known A-list stuff, but I think he really just likes what he likes.
Well, that's
and
it.
I appreciate that.
It probably gives him all that freedom and everything to do that stuff.
Yeah,
right.
True.
So
not as bogged down videos.
He brings a character that to everything he does.
Yeah.
And even there's that, I can't even think of the name of the TV show. My dad used to watch it all the time. He's just a side character for these. I think there's like two people that are solving crimes or something.
Oh, okay.
And he just shows up every once in a while. He's like a friend that helps them with things. I cannot think of the name of the show right now, but I just think he always brings that kind of character you can expect. And he's like this in real life. He's just like a really fun guy to be around. And his conventions that he's there, he always has contests where people dress like him and he judges them, gives them critiques on their outfit. And he's always seems to be like a really cool guy to meet.
Yeah.
And so I think that's cool. I think he is the character you want him to be. And I don't know, everything he's ever been in, I think he's great. Go ahead.
Have you ever met him at conventions?
No, I wish. I'm trying to think if I've met any, I haven't met too many people too famous. The last person I met was from the show The Orville. And I'm not even going to remember her name. She's the lead lady, the ex-wife of the main guy.
Okay.
She's in a movie called The Long Shot, which we got to see this last year.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
oh, nice.
Because my kids had a small appearance in that movie. And so we got to meet the actress afterwards, and my kids took a picture with her and stuff.
Nice.
Oh, that's awesome.
But no, I would love to meet him in person. My other favorite character from part two would be Bobby Joe. I think she's hilarious. The scene where she's like, "You're holding my hand too tight," is just hilarious.
And it's a really good fun moment of like physical comedy, kind of from everybody, in the way that like their eyes slowly turn down to look at like what is holding her hand. It's just, it's fun. It's clever. I really love, I think my favorite might be the scene in the mirror where his double or whatever reaches out and grabs him. I really, really like that.
I mean,
that
they also broke so many dishes in whatever it is in that first cut.
The dishes are so good.
They were like, we can't have the budget to replace it.
I kind of wonder, I'm like, oh my God, poor Bruce Campbell. I hope those were all like really easily breakable, like prop dishes.
I don't think so, because he injured himself a lot. Like,
no way.
He injured himself in the ankle in the first movie. And I think Sam Raimi kept poking it. Like throughout filming the first film, like, but it's not like he was the only one injured, because I think Sam Raimi got stuck falling off of something, and his like foot got stuck in some wood, and so I think other members of the cast were injured. And it was such a low budget film that they didn't have like medical staff on site or anything like that. In the first one, they lived at the site when they got kicked out of their housing that they had rented, because it was being turned into a brothel, and they thought it was a joke until they saw that they started bringing in mass quantities of like beds, and they're like, "Oh, we really are getting kicked out of here."
And they're like, "Oh God, we have to leave." Oh,
right. Okay. And so there's like power tools were stolen by people as they went by. That fireplace in that first movie was their heating, because they didn't have heating in this cabin. So there are days where like someone found Sam Raimi shivering outside as he was just like way too cold. They had to like bring him by the fire. It was just
crazy. I remember reading that, because the first movie was plagued by those issues and it was really cold.
A lot of
the second movie, there was a bunch of other stuff, but it was also really hot. So it's completely the opposite. Mm. And like people were, you know,
getting a heat stroke basically.
Almost.
Yeah.
There's the whole thing with Ted Raimi.
Yes.
That he had, you know, wear the whole latex suit when we're going to get to that. And they had to like dump out buckets of sweat.
Oh my God,
literally from that suit. Because
it was so you could see it in the film too. When he's the in the disguise.
Yes.
Where like he's that creepy old thing and like it's giant. He leans his head over and sweat just pours out of the ear hole. And that's not an effect. That is just practical.
Just how hot it was.
Insane.
Yeah. That
Poor Ted Raimi would just put himself through things for his brother's movies that I'm like, my God.
Ted is the younger brother?
Yeah,
that's what happens.
Sam's the older brother.
That's what happens.
Yeah, it's exactly.
If you're a little brother and you're like, go do this, I'll give you $5.
But he keeps coming, bringing him back, which is great.
Yes, he does. Sometimes I get them confused because they look very similar.
Okay, yeah, sure. That's too funny. Yeah, and then that you talked about the mirror scene, which I think is also really good. It's really... It's got good effects, and it's something they bring back in Army of Darkness, which in that one, I think that's, for as funny as that movie is, I think that scene in Army of Darkness is also pretty scary, because he's getting all these, he's gets this evil him, but then there's all these like little evil hims because the mirror shatters.
Right.
And it's like Gulliver's Travels, but a horror movie. They tie him down, they torture him. That's terrifying to me. I mean,
that's I get scared. What I think of.
There's a rodent around, like there's 50 little me's. I'm terrified. This is not good.
Yes, I always remember that scene, the little mini me scene in Army of Darkness is so great. And I'm always like, is this like Gulliver's Travels? But if it was like fucking terrifying, and that's kind of what it feels like it is most of the time throughout the course of it. It's really funny. Okay, so I feel like another, I guess, aspect that's kind of cool to see the progression of from one to two are like the expansion on the Necronomicon, and then you get more of it in Army of Darkness and stuff like that too. But it's cool to see like it's there, and you know, you have the recordings in the first film and everything is kind of read out loud and stuff like that on the tapes and everything that like the professor reads, and you're like, okay, cool, great. But when you get into part two, they're suddenly like, oh, look, we have like more illustrations and the book looks like it's more of like an actual book and there's more history to it. And you get a little bit more expository dialogue from the professor and stuff like that. So it's cool to kind of see like how you could tell they were coming up with new ideas for it as time would go on and be like, aha, yes, okay, this is also something that we can kind of shoehorn in here and add as part of like the lore of this. Because you don't always, even in some series, you don't always have like a continuity of something like an object. That's like true. That necessarily. So it's kind of cool to see sort of like how the lore expands as time goes on. And in this one, you get the whole introduction of a time loop, right? Like, because there's the whole aspect of like, oh, Ash, here are the old papers from like the 1300s and here is the hero. And it's literally him standing there with a chainsaw hand. And then by the end of the movie.
How he doesn't notice.
I know.
Yeah.
Like it's there. I know. I did like it a lot. In the first movie, they put so much importance on this necklace and how this necklace was going to be important. And then the necklace went missing. Yeah. So they had to get another one. They had to spray paint it the right color. And so they realized at the end that they needed to use it to help destroy the book. But then you get to part two and the book's not destroyed and they have these extra pages. So that's, I think it's fun to keep it alive. And then for me, like the moment that they could actually read these pages, but Jake is afraid that he wants to go get Bobby Joe because she's run out into the woods. And so he throws the pages into the cellar.
Yes.
So they can't get him. So they force him to go out and they have to go to the woods at gunpoint. Jake's not there to help them. And pretty much it's kind of useless when he gets to fighting the demons. And so I guess for me, like, while I think Jake is hilarious, he is definitely frustrating that they had a way to stop it all. And he's like, no, we need to go find my girlfriend, which I get, like, your girlfriend's important, but let's stop the demons and then go save your girlfriend. Then we, like, it's like when you're on a plane, if the air masks drop, put your air mask on first and then put the air mask on your loved ones.
And that's always the message that's repeated over and over and over again, because it's true. You know, your knee-jerk reaction if you are with a loved one, I can imagine for you, like if you're with your kids, obviously, or next to you and things like that, it's completely normal that your immediate reaction is to lean over and put theirs on to make sure that they're fine. But you know, if you pass out in the meantime, that doesn't really help anything, does it?
And I love how the lore of the book keeps expanding, because the third one, we see this pedestal of three Necronomicons. Now, two are supposed to be fake, but he also didn't say the words, even though he never said them properly ever. But he didn't say the words before grabbing the first two. So there's a theory that because Sam Raimi thinks there are multiple books out there, that maybe they were all real. Mm-hmm. And so that's why the book looks different per movie.
Yeah.
And that if he just said the words correctly before grabbing any of the books, he could have just walked away with anyone that he wanted.
Yeah, because then even if you take that and you get into even the current films, like, you know, with Evil Dead Rise, and I'm sure Evil Dead Burn, which is coming out in July, we will see probably something also, again, ever so slightly different, even though I know that those ones, from everything that we've seen, are going to tie into each other, like, pretty directly in terms of the storyline, for sure.
Yeah,
a lot of people seem to think that one of the Deadites that we see in the trailer for Evil Dead Burn is the woman from the lake at the beginning, and then at the end again on Evil Dead Rise.
Yeah, I've seen that. And because you do see someone in the trailer who is drowning a person on like a boat in a lake. And so there does seem to be a tie-in to this, which would obviously be logical if you're going to tie it into the same universe and have that be like a direct consequence in the way that they did in Evil Dead Rise, in which like we had the entire story that takes place in the high rise. And then right at the end, the Deadite moves from the sister who's been killed into the woman who we saw already in the cold open, who was headed out for the weekend to a cabin with her friends.
Yeah. So it makes sense.
Right. And then you brought up the time loop thing.
Yeah.
I think that's fun in this whole series, that in Evil Dead Rise, they are listening to the records.
Okay.
And there's record that you're hearing the townsfolk talk about reading this out loud, and there's a person that runs up saying, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. Mm-hmm. And that is Bruce Campbell, his voice, which leads to the theory that he's still out there time traveling. And he was there trying to stop this rise of Deadites in the past, which I think is a fun little thing because he's not really in the movie, but he is because, like, you set up more lore or possible. I think
that's an awesome idea. Like, if that's actually really the case, I think they should just lean into that and say, yes, Ash, in fact, is still time traveling because he is trying to stop all of these instances throughout history of the Deadites rising up, basically.
He was also the initiator, technically, of it in some way.
Well, kind of. I mean, it's just because they played the tape. Why does everybody do that in everything?
Everybody keeps reading it or playing it.
Don't play the tape.
And they're
man.
Like, oh, I'm just going to listen to the, like, it's like in Evil Dead when Scotty's just like, I want to hear the end of it. And he just like plays the whole thing. I'm like,
Scotty's an asshole.
Scotty sucks. You're about 5 minutes into the movie and you're like, oh, I already hate Scotty. Mm-hmm. He's such a pain in the ass.
Was there anything that like freaked you out when you were watching the first one as a kid about the book and about the whole kind of lore thing and everything behind the book?
Yeah, the fact that it's made out of flesh is pretty is pretty gross. And then I don't know, the makeup was really good for practical the makeup. That under that that basement area, right? Like they chained her and she's banging on the door and she's looking out. She looks freaking creepy. She turned fast. And they seem to think maybe she can come back, maybe she can't, but that's terrifying. And then I would say the effect with the leg where the person stabbed with a pencil.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah, that's when you were freaking out about it.
It was like this stop motion kind of thing where the actress had to sit there for hours as they drew, took a picture, drew some more, took a picture, and she couldn't move that leg forever. Wow. That was terrifying. And then just the fact that no matter how much you're chopping these things up or whatever, they just keep coming for you.
Yep.
I think is crazy. And then the way the first one ends, no matter how badass he is, and he gets more badass in the second one, right? Like the first one, he's nowhere as cool as he is the second one on.
He's almost like self-effacing in the first film. I had forgotten how different everything and like Ash is as a character between movie one and movie two. And then obviously by the time he's in Army of Darkness, we're fully on this bandwagon of like Ash is like a smarmy, sarcastic, a bit of a dick, but still charming.
But a likable dick, which is funny. but the way that first one ends though, evil won. And there's no way to get like, how do you leave that movie? Like, if there's no sequel and evil has won at the end of this one, it's good. I mean, there's a lot of movies. I don't know how I'm drawn to these kind of movies, but I am. There's a movie with Denzel Washington called Fallen that came out in the 90s where I don't want to say how it ends, but it's similar. Like, evil is triumphant here. And it's like, while frustrating, it's like, oh, I like that ending. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of crazy.
Sometimes it's okay. Seriously, I'm a fan of those where technically kind of like the bad side wins or whatever it is. Because 99.9% of the movies are just like, and everything wraps in a bow. Here you go. Have a candy. Go home.
Yeah.
Like, no, sometimes it doesn't work like that.
Unfortunately.
And it's a nice, refreshing thing to
see. Well, because every once in a while, unfortunately, things feel a little bit truer to life that way. And you're just like, okay, well, you know what? Unfortunately, sometimes things just don't work out. And the shitty people are the people who kind of get away with everything shitty that they are doing. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Overall, I feel like, because I feel like, I guess these kind of like go hand in hand in their own way, even though one is a remake-ish, sort of, before, you know, before Scream decided to hop on this like remake requel bandwagon and like actually like coin it. And I know we were doing it already with Halloween and some other stuff, obviously, but like I think the 2018 Halloween, I think was like one of the ones that kind of like pointed out like, okay, here's what we're doing. So we're existing in the same universe and some stuff is canon, but some stuff is absolutely not canon at all. And we're just going to ignore and pretend that it never happened, basically. But this, I feel like strangely, this movie was doing it first. It was just kind of like, la, 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 just ignore what's happening in the background there. Ignore what happened before. It's fine. It's
this
fine.
Is totally what we wanted to do initially.
Yes. Yeah, it's interesting too, because if Sam Raimi had a say, if he just had funding right off the bat to make a second movie, he was going to go straight into Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
And he wanted to call it Medieval Dead, I think was one title that he was thinking about. Yeah, so Stephen King brought, like, he liked the movie and he said, hey, you know what? Maybe he should make more movies. Like, he's done a really good job. So then the studio gave money, but said he had to make the same movie. They were like, we want to see more of the same thing. We don't want,
because the first one did well, right?
Yeah. Well,
yeah, that's it.
Well, like, enough.
Well enough that people in the indie circuit, I think, were like, hey, this is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But not well enough to instantly get funny for another one. Yeah. Right. So it took a long time. So he made this film to set up the third film that he wanted. But he also changed a lot and he made it funnier. And I like that, because in the middle of Demons Are Still Horrifying to Me, that hand is definitely terrifying me. Those trees terrify me. And then Deadites themselves and Ted Raimi. It's scary at the end there. At least there's parts where you can laugh, because even that hand is funny, even though he's like, oh my gosh, I had to cut off my own hand. Now my hand's attacking me and I'm less powerful than I was a second ago, because now I only have one hand.
And it's so cool to see also on that point too, like with Ted Raimi and everything, like honestly, for the lack of budget that they did have with the original film, it's really impressive what they were able to do. But it's also very cool to see the additional creature effects that you get in the second one, because the second one kicks it up like a ton of notches since they did have a higher budget. Obviously you have, you know, the start of like all of like the stop motion-y stuff that we get, and an inclination for what you're going to get in Army of Darkness with like skeletons, like little stop motion skeleton people and the creatures like flying in the sky and stuff like that. And like all those kinds of aspects of it. But you get a lot of that with like, especially at the end of the movie, you get a lot of that with like Henrietta when, you know, she fully like her like snake head there pops up or whatever the hell it is. Her like neck extends and gets really long and everything. All that stuff is super fucking cool. And I really
like that giant head at the end.
Oh yeah.
Left there after the movie because they didn't haul it anywhere. Yep. And some like haunted house just eventually found it and like took it as their own, which I think is great.
It's brilliant. And also obviously it would wind up somewhere like that, because who the hell is gonna take it's huge. Who's gonna take something like that and actually put it in like their yard, right? No, you're not gonna do that. You're just gonna grab it.
I wanna know what happens to this prop essentially now. Probably worth millions.
It would be now. I'm sure it might be, it might not exist anymore. It might have like gotten broken down still over the years, so who knows. But hey, listen, one can hope. Maybe we'll find it one day.
Right.
And then going back to that tree scene, the so Robert Taubert was, like I said, was behind it and was always moving for things like that in Army of Darkness. Bruce Campbell was, he had just gotten divorced and he met his, who would become his second wife.
And a designer, I think so.
Right. Yeah. And so Robert Taubert came to her and said, I need a lot of dresses, or I need a lot of costumes for naked women. And she was like, what do you mean? Like, and he like walked away without explain this to me. Like, you either need costumes or you don't. Because, and then in the movie, they're there for like maybe 10 seconds.
Yeah.
They're like, the Skeleton Army has gotten a bunch of women and they're prisoner, they're chained up, but they're wearing underwear maybe. And
yeah.
And remember hearing that Sam Raimi was trying to fight for a PG-13 rating. And I'm like, nothing. And in my brain is like, well, nothing in that movie is that bad. Why would it? And then I remember, oh wait, there is topless women in this movie.
Yeah. Right.
How are you going to get a PG-13 rating with this one thing? So I think that's interesting.
I have some really strong questions for Robert Taubert, just like as a human being. I'm like, all of this stuff that you're bringing up to me is really making me be like, okay. And then on top of it, like, this man is married to Lucy Lawless and I'm not sure that he should be. I'm like, I don't know about that. I don't know if you deserve Xena Warrior Princess, because she's pretty fucking great. So
he is great. I do find that as funny as well, but maybe that's really where all my trauma is that this guy thought they're making decisions on movies.
It's because of him.
It's very much
is your trauma.
Well, it's just very much a product of its time, isn't it? Where it's just like, hey, how many boobs can I shove into this movie, and how much blood can I stick in here? And you're like, okay.
Yeah, right. And they tried to change the color of the blood. I think it was in the first one or the second one to kind of like lower the rating to be like, no, this is not blood. This is
it's green in some of the scenes. It's a green in some of the scenes when he kills like one of the Deadites in this one.
Well, there's the whole scene with the blood from the wall.
But that one it is like more like red blood, but when he kills Ed's character, Ed, like Deadite Ed, mm-hmm. later, it's green, if I'm not mistaken. And I also, like, I found, like, watching it, I'm just kind of like, why is it suddenly green when none of the others have been green the entire time?
Ratings, man. It's all about the MPAA ratings.
Yeah, that's why, like, Masters of the Universe, right, when they did the He-Man movie, you know, a couple decades back.
Yes.
That he, all the bad guys were trained, changed into robots so that he could kill relentlessly.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And they wouldn't be, like, a higher rating for it, which is hilarious.
I wonder what we're getting this time. That movie's coming out soon, isn't it?
Yeah.
The new He-Man.
Yeah, it is coming out really soon.
Gosh.
It looks funny. I want to watch it.
We're getting, I just feel like we're getting a lot of, like, these types of films this year. We've already had Mortal Kombat 2. Mm-hmm. We have the Masters of the Universe movie coming out. Street Fighter is coming out. I think in the
fall. That one looks good. That one looks good.
That looks hilarious.
I showed him the trailer because I was like, oh, I feel like you're going to like this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel like we're firmly, our butts are firmly planted on that nostalgia bandwagon. And we are all kind of here for it for now because we know that in about 5 to 7 years, that's all going to kind of peter out a little bit. And then we won't get anything else like that for a while. So, and it'll be everything that came for, like, the generation after ours. So we may as well just take advantage while they're willing to make these things.
Sure. Do you have a wish list of things you would like to see rebooted or another movie? Because for me, it's Power Rangers and Ninja Turtles. Like, even... like, let's combine those and just have an adventure
Power
together.
Ranger Ninja Turtles
because
movie.
It's happened in canon in the TV show, which is hilarious. And I just remember being 2 a.m. I was watching Ninja Turtles and, I'm sorry, I was watching Power Rangers when the Ninja Turtles showed up and I lost my mind. And I was trying not to laugh. I was trying laughing in my pillow so that I didn't wake up the whole household because it was hilarious.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I have anything that I'm like, you know what? I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind some sort of a newer take on an Inspector Gadget. Anything. Right. I think that would be pretty fun. I would not be sad if they did that.
That's right. I don't know. I have to think about that one. There's so many things that I like in every reboot. Not every, but a lot of the reboots that I've seen, it's kind of like,
It's been fine.
But it's also, I know because I'm biased because I've seen it and this is what I remember.
Yeah.
You know, this is my core thing. So I don't want it to change. So.
Like, there are some things that I feel like we just, maybe we've done too much of it, like we never need it again. Well, like, I'm going to say Transformers. I will never need to watch a Transformers movie again as long as I live, just because of the oversaturation of that franchise when they really hopped on it and it got a little bit popular. Oof, God.
You know what I'm thinking right now? Do the Matrix, but horror style. More like what they did with the anime of the Matrix.
Oh, I see. Okay. Because I was like, I have no idea what you're talking
about. The Animatrix was wild.
Okay, I haven't watched it, I don't know. Okay.
There are some scenes that I'm still, like, jarred about.
Interesting.
That's fucked. Like, have you seen that one?
When I was a teenager, I think.
Yeah.
But it's just been such a long time. That's just like Aeon Flux for me. Like, I haven't seen it since I was young, but I remember a lot of that being disturbing as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
For sure it's going to come back. They always do reboots. And
no, they will, for sure. Like, they tried it with having, like, sequels, and it was bad, and nobody liked it. Yep. So they're not going to do that again, but they might lean into, like, a different, like, offshoot or spinoff or something instead and just do something like that.
Yeah. We'll see. Hey, I mean, the Evil Dead one, everyone's super hyped about it, so...
I think everybody's really well. I feel like most people really liked Evil Dead Rise, like we did.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely looking forward to Evil Dead Burn. It looks crazy. It looks like it's going to be really interesting to see. And, you know, to be fair, this will be 2 Evil Dead movies in 1 year because I think we can all agree that The Mummy was an Evil Dead movie wrapped in a binding of, like, a mummy. That's just it. It was wrapped in, like, the
No, but I think binding. It was confirmed that it's canon Evil Dead stuff.
Oh, 100% it is. It has to exist in the same universe. Mm. It's basically a similar film. Like, it might have a different plot, but everything else is the same.
Yeah.
I think once I hear Sam Raimi say it, it'll feel a little better about it.
Right.
Because it's Lee Cronin saying it's canon.
And
so I want Sam Raimi to say it.
Just, like, confirm.
Yeah, that would be great for me. But I like having more stuff in it. Because I think we can't always have the same story that someone reads a book and then all hell breaks loose. I think we need to have a world where the Deadites are just there now.
And they just show up.
Because
we've had, it's been so long and this franchise is so iconic that, you know, it is self-referential and it's parodied in other things like in Cabin in the Woods with a number of references.
Yeah.
That you get in a movie like that. If it exists to a point where it's that iconic, I think it's true that you need to take it and not rehash the exact same thing that happens in the original. And just that doesn't have to be what it is. It doesn't have to be someone reading anymore or listening to a tape anymore for something to happen.
That's it.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, these are just really enjoyable. So watching them now. So I guess that's my final question.
Yes.
So watching something like Evil Dead, first one, second one, whatever it is now in life, in re-examining this, how do you feel about them now as a whole? Like, are they just more enjoyable? Do you feel like you're kind of like, I don't know why I was as afraid of these as I was, or do you still have the memory of like how you felt about it?
I guess I'm not as scared as I used to be, but that I'd say the one thing that still gets to me and it unnerves me so much is that laugh, that Linda's laugh.
The nonstop laugh that she has for most of that movie. Oof, yeah.
And I can just imagine being that frustrated and someone's just there laughing at me and no matter what, I can't do anything about it. That is frustrating me. But I enjoy these movies a lot. And all my kids have seen Army of Darkness because that's...
It's the fun one. It's the dark fantasy one of the bunch, really.
Right. And so I like watching them. I like watching them all. I'm not a massive collector of Evil Dead stuff, but I like to have multiple copies of some things if it comes out with a new cover. There's two different covers for the 2013 one, which I don't own. And I think I want to, you know, it's like, when do I want to buy those? You know, because they're fun. And then I don't know if I'm going to go the route of buying them on VHS because, you know, I might have had them a long time ago, but all my VHS is gone. I gave them all away or sold them all in a garage sale or they're all just, you know, before I realized I'd want to keep that kind of thing. But
yeah, same. That has happened. I've re-examined and been like, oh, crap, why did I do that?
Yeah. So for me, they're fun. Is it even if they're, you know, a little scary, I know that my youngest would be terrified. No way to make it through this. But I think it's fun to watch. I think it's fun to rewatch. I think for me, it's like Phantasm. I'd like something I like to watch yearly if I can. And just, you know, have a day where, you know what, I'm just going to watch it. Like I took 5 days off earlier in the month in a row. And I watched so many horror movies that I had never seen before. And then a couple that I just wanted to rewatch, which was a lot of fun.
That sounds like a great time.
It does. Please. Yeah. I love those times when you just like get to sort of take that relaxation and you're like, I need to put something on that's just going to like bring me joy in some capacity. And it's normally something that you have seen before, but that you have just a lot of love for. Yeah. It's great. Okay. So I guess to just wrap things up, Elzar, do you want to, I guess, give everyone an idea of where they can find all of the Nightmarecos podcast stuff, socials, all that jazz?
Yeah, so I get Instagram is where I'm most active and Threads, and it's Nightmarecos Pod. And then from there, you could find any of my links to anything else. I mean, if you listen to it on YouTube, it's there. But I mean, it's also on Spotify or Apple Music. Or wherever you else you get your podcast. So
awesome! And do you want to give anybody a sneak peek about maybe some stuff that you're going to be covering anytime soon that they might be interested?
Yeah, because we know you have a giant list. You're like super prepared.
Yeah,
so.
For anyone who's unaware, Elazar is the most well organized podcaster I've ever spoken to in my life. So
yeah, I have something like 20 episodes already recorded in advance.
That's amazing.
But the rest of this summer is. We're doing like water horror, then we're doing vacation horror, like traveling to other places, and then also camping horror. So I think I'm excited about covering, let's see here, The Ritual, Final Girls, Infinity Pool. Those are some good ones. I'm going to record on Influencer soon. And then we're going to finish up the Insidious franchise before the next one comes out. And we're always doing, we've recorded every episode in our Hellraiser run, like every Hellraiser ever, but they won't finish coming out until December.
Right.
We slowly release them.
Yeah, as they come. And as everybody, all the co-hosts have to hop in for all of their different sort of sub-genres that they're covering.
I like to give people turns, you know, so it's not like 8 weeks of Jesse.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah.
That's fair.
Which, yeah.
That's awesome. Fun.
But okay. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Absolutely.
Thank you for hopping on with us.